guest this morning, and we've paid a lot of money to have him along to share of his wisdom, and his name is Godfrey. Let's give him a big round of applause.
Okay, morning all. Firstly, let me start by saying Happy Father's Day. This is my second? My second Father's Day. And I'll talk a little bit. Oh, it looks like it's working now. Okay, right, let's see if it'll... Yay! Okay. Now we are cooking. Right. Happy Father's Day. So, thanks, guys, very much. I'm a father of two, and I feel like I've only been a father for 5 minutes, just compared to some people. So I'm going to speak about some of my experiences, and it's not because I have all the answers, because I definitely don't. You can ask my wife. She'll tell you that. I kind of learn on the job. It's one of those things that you never really suss it out. But I'm just going to speak a little bit about kind of what it is to be a father and the kind of attributes that we want to have or we aspire to have. So I became a father for the first time on the 17th of December, 2019. Yeah, I got another, I got it correct. at precisely 3:27 a.m., okay, early riser, and our son Jesse was born. And that's the first time I held him. And I had this idea of when you become a father and the baby's there and you know, they're going to be all cute and pink and eyes closed and you're going to just be filled with this bursting love. And I didn't have that. And Jesse came out after a bit of a struggle. He came out and they were carrying him across. They cut the umbilical cord. And as they carried him across, it's almost like time slowed. And his eyes were open, which I did not expect. And he was this kind of weird gray color. So this gray thing is floating by, locks eyes with me, and it's almost as if to say, get ready, Dad. I'm about to rock your world. And then from that moment, I was like, okay. And then lots of things happened because of the complications during the birth. And then I was stood in the room on my own. Haley was rushed to theater, and I'm kind of lost. I've got our bags. And then this nurse came in, saw me, this lost sheep, and said, oh, I'll take you where you need to go. Sat there. A few minutes later, Jesse and Haley came, and I got to hold him for the first time, and then it was there. And then I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. I know what this feeling is, this feeling where you would sacrifice anything for your child. And then precisely 1,035 days, 58 minutes, 15 hours, give or take if I'm rounding up here, Eliza was born. Okay, I always wanted a little girl. We had a boy, so I was like really hoping we would get a girl, and we got a girl. And as soon as she was born, like my protective instinct kicked in, and I was like, no one is coming near her. The kind of, I don't know if other fathers experience that when you have a daughter, but that came in. And so that was my experience of being a dad. A dad of two wonderful children. I look younger in the second one, I don't know why. The first one was quite traumatic, maybe the second one's more relaxing. But in both of those, God really taught us lessons. In the first one, we had no idea what was going on. And again, we had to just fully rely on God. In the second one, Haley had to be induced. And so we knew kind of what the journey was. We knew what it could get. It could go to possibly a cesarean, and we didn't want that. And so that was always in the back of our minds. And we tried to stay focused on the present. We said, look, we just trust God. These people are here. These are who God has sent for us to get us through these times. And I was trying to be the calm one. I'm normally quite logical, methodical, quite calm. Haley is more spirited, we shall say. Is that a fair way of saying it? Yeah. And so when the anxiety started kicking out, I would step in and, you know, let's think of it logically. We're only here. It might not get there. Otherwise, we're just going to worry so much now for nothing. When you start worrying, it affects different chemicals in it. So I'm doing all the spiel, trying to keep calm, and things are progressing slowly. It got to the point where I actually bought her some Lego so that she could build Lego and take her mind off the whole process. Anyway, everything went as smoothly as it could go, and Eliza was born. She was a little bit small, but we knew that, and we had two very healthy babies. Now, as a dad, it comes with expectations, and in our kind of modern society, the expectations waver. Some people have high expectations, some have low expectations. And I'm here to just talk about the kind of expectations that come from God's point of view, from God's perspective as a Christian. And so I would like to talk today about the iDad. Okay, and the iDad is our revolutionary new dad, and it is packed full of features. And I'm very pleased to talk about it with you this morning. Now, people love the iDad. iDad's popular all over the world. There are billions all across the globe, and we have them in different range of colors, cultures, heights, weights, and people love the dads. We have the iDad Pro for your more business-minded dads, more horsepower under the hood. And we also have the iDad Air. This is the more fun-going dad, more flexible maybe, a little bit on the silly side, but there is an iDad for everyone. And this morning, I'd like to share some of the features that the iDad has. So some of the popular features are the dad dancing feature, which brings entertainment and embarrassment in equal amounts. As we saw, the guys this morning did really well. I can't even say it was embarrassing. We have the build it feature, where you can leave the iDad with flat pack furniture, come back later, and it will be done. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer than anticipated, and it doesn't look exactly as it does on the box, but this feature is one of our most popular ones. The other feature that people love is the quick charge feature. And with just a 20-minute nap on the sofa, the iDad will be ready to go again for the rest of the day. It's a feature that people love, and we're pleased that we've included it in our iDads. Now, here's some of the quotes from some of the people who have iDads and just how pleased they are with them. You heard this morning the children talking about them. This person said, "My dad is the best. He's a superstar." And that's from Jesse, age 3. And this is based on market research. Here's another quote. "There's no one quite like him. He's generous and loving with an effervescent personality." And that's from Eliza, age 8 months. Very, very bright children here. Also very honest. But in all seriousness, dads are loved. And here I want to introduce you to the new operating software called the iDad OS. Now, iDad OS is built from the ground up. using a specific programming language called BibleScript. Okay, we're not using JavaScript anymore or Swift, we're using BibleScript. And it has been tested throughout the years and it stands true to this day. And this morning I'd like to share just three of the key features that come with the new update to iDAD OS. Okay, so the first mode we call hero mode. Okay, hero mode. Now dads are seen as heroes. When I became a dad, I wanted to be a hero. I wanted my son to see me as like a superhero. And we'll all be familiar with different superheroes, whether it's Marvel or DC. If you want to know about superheroes, especially Marvel ones, you can speak to our own encyclopedia. His name is Glenn Pond. And he will let you know all the details. But superheroes have superpowers, something that makes them special. We've got Superman can fly, he's got super strength, and he does that laser thing. You've got, who else is there? Captain America, super strength and speed. You've got Thor with his hammer. You've got Batman. I don't know if he has any real superhero. No, he's just super rich, right? That's his superpowers. He's so rich he could become a superhero. But superheroes with lots of different attributes, different things that make them special, different powers. And I like to see myself as a superhero. My favorite superhero is Spider-Man. Okay. It's funny, I didn't do this, okay? If you come into our school, into the foyer, there's a display about what is your superpower? Yeah, what's your superhero power? And it's just to get the kids to discover that actually there are things that they can do that makes them unique. And mine happens to be Spider-Man. So if you want to come into my school, you'll see me emblazoned on the wall looking like that. But that's how I want to be seen. I want to be seen by my children as a superhero. You know, if they say, oh, Dad, can you reach that for me? Yes, I'll get that. Yeah, and I like giving them, Daddy, can I have my vitamin? Oh, yeah. I'm like, get it. Can you open it? And I open it. Yeah, I want to be that guy. Daddy, can you build me a rocket to go on my scooter so I can take it to school? Yes, son. I want to be that guy, okay? And I make fun of it, but it comes, the whole point of being a hero is kind of like being reliable. I need you. Can I rely on you to do the things that I can't do? Yeah, superheroes in comic movies, something goes wrong and people rely on them to solve the situation. And that's the kind of dad that we're encouraged to be. That's the kind of dad that I aspire to be. In Mark 16, verses 15 to 18, it said, and he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will follow those who believe. In my name, they will cast out demons. They will speak new tongues. They will take up serpents. And if they drink anything deadly, it will by no means hurt them. They will lay hands on the sick and they will recover. Okay. So this is what it talks about. If you're a Christian father today, you're not like these superheroes. You've got extra special powers that God gives us. And it talks about casting out demons. And I don't know, as the father, as the man of the house, I see myself as the protector. Something's happening, I need to be the person to go and deal with it. I'm not saying women can't or ladies can't or mothers can't, but this is, for me personally, this is what I see. And so when children are frightened of something or like, you know, something's under my bed, whatever it might be, then I'm going to be the one who goes in there or sort out the danger. Oh, there's nothing there. Yeah, I put my cape back on and off I go. If something happens in the middle of the night and we're asleep and Haley wakes me up and says, I think there's a noise downstairs. I'm not going to roll over and say, okay, let me know what it is. And then, you know, I roll over. I'm like, okay, you wait here. I'll go check it out. I'll go down, stumble my way down the stairs, fumble with the gate or the child lock and figure out, oh, it's just the neighbors, you know, flushing the toilet or something. But I'm that person. And in here it talks about casting out demons. And if we're really in tune with God, and the Spirit lives in us, the Spirit that can cast out demons lives in us. And it sounds a bit far-fetched, and maybe it sounds a bit over the top. And I read this, I thought to myself, wow, imagine having those powers. Imagine being able to put your hands on someone and heal the sick. Imagine being able to cast out demons. And then it hit me, no, don't imagine, do it. It's real. God gives this to us. And if we don't, it's almost like if we don't use it, we lose it, and then we just lose the confidence to just go out and do these things. And I'm speaking to myself here. God says a lot to me, and I'm like, but is it you, God? And then later on, I'm like, it was you. I should have acted on it. We can do these things, guys. We can pray and heal. We can cast out demons. We can be the protector. The other superpower that God gives us is a spirit of discernment, to know when something's not right. And women are really good at this. Haley's really good at just feeling that something's off. Men, this is why we have this upgrade, okay? And it's been not just danger, but this discernment of knowing that God is speaking to you about a particular situation. And it says in John 16:13, it says, when the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all truth, for he will not speak of his own authority, but whatever he hears, he will speak, and he will declare to you the things that are to come. Now, Spider-Man has this ability called spider sense. When there's danger coming, he has this like thing, and he can react to it. He knows something's about to happen, and he's prepared. And we have that in us. The Spirit kind of lets us know, okay, you know, maybe you shouldn't be here, or that's not right, or what's being said, that's not right. And sometimes when God speaks, this is to me as well, sometimes when God speaks, I can feel that it's God, because it doesn't sound like me. It's like a random thought, a random thing. God has put this in my head or in my heart. And I know it's him, but I'm so afraid to use this, I don't want to call it power, but this gift that God has given me, that I hold back and I pull back and I don't use it. And I'll give you an example. A few months ago, this is just after Eliza was born, a colleague at work, I didn't know this, she was trying to get pregnant. Okay, she'd been trying for a while, I didn't know. And she just approached me one day, and she said, oh, Godfrey, can I speak to you later? And I said, yeah, I'm not teaching this afternoon, I'm not in class. Just come and find me. I said, okay. So then what happens is you spend the whole time thinking, what is it they want to talk to me about? They've never sounded like this before. My mom used to do that. Like, oh, yeah, we did. Okay, when you come back, we'll speak. I was like, oh, great, I can't enjoy myself now because I'm going to be thinking about what it is. So I spent the whole morning thinking, what is it? What does she want to speak to me about? Anyway, she came to my room, and she said, look, it's quite personal what I want to speak to you about. I was like, okay. And she said, you know, we've been trying to get pregnant for a few months now. How did you do it? And then my mind was like, no. She's not asking for tips. She says, she wants to know, I don't know, maybe the, you know, so I just kept quiet. I said, just be quiet and just listen. So I just listened, and she just explained, you know, they've been trying for a few months. And then her anxiety was building up. And as she was speaking, I felt something say, she's gonna get pregnant within the next few weeks. I think it was 7 weeks. Somebody said, within the next 6 or 7 weeks, she'll be pregnant. And I'm still listening to her talk. I'm like, why is that popped into my head? Because I am not thinking, I can't just say it to her, because she's built it up so much. If I go and then say it, and it doesn't happen, then how does that look on me? And this is what I'm thinking of. I'm not thinking about, hold on, this has come from God, say it with God's authority. I was kind of afraid of this ability, and I didn't say it. I didn't say anything, and thinking back now, I can't remember whether I said it to her or whether I thought it, but I just remember thinking, okay, we'll pray for you. And I honestly can't remember whether I said it audibly or in my head, but I just knew, okay, I'm going to pray for you. Anyway, we had the talk. She went. A few weeks later, maybe 3 or 4 weeks later, she was stood next to me, and she was glowing. You know, sometimes women get this glow. And I didn't say anything. Again, God was like, she's pregnant. And I was like, don't say anything. You could be wrong. And how does it look on me? How does it look on me? So again, I'm not thinking about this ability that God has given us. And I didn't say anything. And then a couple of weeks later, she called me, Godfrey. Because I'm 5 weeks pregnant. I was like, what? Because yeah. She was so excited. And I was so excited, but I had to play it cool. So I said, oh, congratulations. Oh, that's it. And I gave her a hug and everything like that. And then I was so elated for her, but I was disappointed in myself because God told me that. God gave me this ability, gives us this ability, the spirit of discernment, being able to hear from him and preach the word or give words to people, whatever it is, and I didn't do it. So it was a happy moment. I was ecstatic. Haley had prayed for her as well, and I didn't use my power. And in Spider-Man as well, Spider-Man's uncle was Uncle Ben, and Uncle Ben has a famous saying. Glenn, you know what it is, right? With great power comes great responsibility. And with the things that God gives us, it's not just for us to have and sit on. This is, I guess I'm speaking to everyone, not just dads here this morning. It's not for us to sit on, it's for us to use. We have this power and we are responsible for using it the way God has instructed. I should have said it. I should have just relied on God and said, look, I feel in my spirit God is saying this, and I believe this for you. And I should have done it. And hopefully one day I'll be up here this morning, and I will tell you a testimony of when I do that. Hopefully it will come soon. So that's power mode. So that's hero mode. Okay, those are the features for hero mode. Dads, I hope you enjoy it. The next one is legacy. Legacy mode. And legacy is the idea of passing something down from generation to generation. Some people want to pass down generational wealth. That would be great. Some people want to pass down different traditions or how we do things. This next one we call legacy. I'm just going to read something from Psalm 78. It says, give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open up my mouth in a parable, and I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide from them. So we will not hide them from their children, telling the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he has done. For he has established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commands our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation might come to know them, the children who would be born, that they may arise and declare them to their children, that they may set their hope in God and not forget the works, but keep his commandments. So they're talking about passing on the word from generation to generation. And things get passed on. Nothing makes you more aware of what you do than when you're in a room with a child. Sometimes Jesse will say something or a particular phrase, I'm like, wait, is that what I sound like to him? So he says, come on, guys. So he says that a lot, and I'm like, that sounds like me. Is that what he hears? So I want to try and change maybe the way I speak or the way I do things. And I came across this story of the Christmas ham. I think it's an American thing, what we would call maybe gammon steak or something. And it's around Christmas time, and they're preparing this ham. And the mother is preparing the ham, and her little daughter sees the mum. She's preparing the ham, and the mum just cuts a chunk off the ham as she's preparing. She cuts a chunk off, and she puts it in the roasting tin. And the girl says, "Mum, why do you cut that little bit off?" And she said, "I don't know. My mum used to do it. Your grandma used to do it." So the girl's like, "Okay." Goes to grandma. "Grandma, when you cook the Christmas ham, why do you cut a little bit off? Why do you do that?" And grandma's like, "I don't know. I've just always done that. I think your great-grandma used to do that." So she goes to great-grandma. "Great-grandma, when you cooked your Christmas ham, why did you cut the bit off the end?" And she says, "Oh, well, my roasting tin was too small. So it wouldn't fit. So I would cut the bit off the end so that it would fit in the roasting tin." And that was her answer. And I love that story, because the idea is that sometimes we end up passing things down. We're not conscious of it, but we just pass it down, and we don't know why we are passing it down. We don't know whether it's useful or whether it's not. And we have things that we pass down that might be questionable and might be called tradition. And sometimes the focus is on so much of what we want to pass down, and we think that the things that we don't focus on are less important. But sometimes those things that we're not focused on, that's what our children are going to see. And then that's what they'll adopt. I can't imagine that in that scenario, each parent was like, "Oh yeah, we're going to cut this bit off the end and explain it." They just did it. The child saw it. I said, "Oh, okay, that's how you do it. I'm also going to cut it off the end," not knowing really why. And if there is one thing that we should actively pass down, not kind of unintentionally, we want to actively pass down, then that's Jesus. And that should be an intentional thing. And in the psalm, it talks about telling the next generation about God. Because if we don't do it, it's going to get lost. I don't know. When I lived in Ghana with my grandparents, we learned Fanti. And I used to speak it with my grandparents and my younger brother. And I knew it. And I could speak it. I could sing in it. I could whatever. And we came to the UK. And I would speak it with my dad a little bit, my brother. But my mum and my younger brother didn't speak it. So it was a bit awkward where if I had a conversation in Fanti with my brother or my dad, and they're in the room, they're like, wait, what are you saying? Are you talking about me? Or is this a kind of secret thing? Or so we didn't speak it. So I didn't use it. And then eventually, it kind of faded away, to the point where I don't speak. I can't already stand here and say, I speak Fanti. I can understand it. I can hear a conversation and kind of translate, but I couldn't go to someone and start up a conversation. I didn't use it. So unfortunately, I can't pass that down to Jesse because that's his heritage. I can't pass that down to him because I didn't use it. Same thing with the gospel. If that doesn't get passed down, I think actively and intentionally, then it will fade. It will become insignificant to our kids. They won't see us living that lifestyle that God calls us to live. And it's easy to pass on. It's not difficult. We don't have to sit it down and teach it in a way. It's if you know who Jesus is, if you know why he died for us, then that's it. You just pass that down. If you pass down that knowledge, and that's what we need to pass down. And the children will emulate what we do. So it's not just about telling them, it's about living it, it's about doing it. I dance a lot at home. I love dancing. I had to restrain myself from coming up here to dance. But I dance, and then suddenly Jesse starts dancing. There's a point where we'd be in the street and someone's speaker, car speaker, would be playing music, and he would stop mid-pavement and start dancing. Just come on, let's go, buddy. And so you just have to let it get it out of the system. Eventually the car drives off, and then we can carry on doing whatever we're doing. But he sees what I do, or he sees what we do, and he emulates that. And he emulates that. And, sorry, the older I've gotten, I kind of realized that I have my dad's mannerisms. So and I didn't really notice this until a couple of years ago. But my dad, if you know me, you kind of know what my dad is like. He was very calm, very measured, didn't take himself too serious. He was a lot taller. that's one thing we didn't have. He was calm, he was measured, he had a wicked sense of humor, had an infectious laugh. He would laugh and you would start laughing and think, you know, where's that coming from? I just remember him always being calm. I don't remember him raising his voice. I don't remember him shouting. And I think the loudest he ever got was when he was on the phone with Uncle Sam and he agreed with him on something and he'd go, you'd be in one room and you hear that. So, oh, okay, Dad's talking to Uncle Sam. That was the loudest he ever got. When he disciplined us, he always, you know, sat us down and spoke to us. It was never shouting at us or telling us off in that sense. And I realized that as I've grown up, and I don't know if I adopted them intentionally, there are things about him that I'm actively, yes, I need to be like that, I need to be like that. And there are other things where I think, well, maybe I will be different. His choice of football team was Liverpool, so I stay clear away of that. I'm not going to tell you who I support. Some of you know, but I don't want to be judged before I finish. But there are some things that he did that I adopted, and he didn't sit me down and say, look, son, you need to be calm, you need to be this, you need to be that. I just saw him living that way. So the way he interacted with my mum, I'm like, okay, that's how I have to treat my wife if I'm blessed enough to have one. That's how I need to treat her. That's how I need to interact with people. Okay, that's how I need to speak to my children if they've done something wrong. And I watched him and I adopted those things. And in the Bible it says, this is when Jesus was healing people on the Sabbath and some of the Jews didn't like it. And in John 5:19 it says, Jesus answered and said to them, most assuredly I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he sees the Father do. For whatever he does, the Son also does in like manner. Yeah. So this is Jesus talking about himself. He's doing what the Father does, and that's what our kids do. They do what the Father or the adult does. And I'll tell us a quick story. I was teaching, and there was just a random morning. I'm teaching maths. I've done my speaking bit, and the children are just getting on with their work. And it's not like in my day where the teacher could just sit at their desk and then the children just get on with it. You got to be roaming around, just making sure everyone's staying on task. So I'm roaming around, and the children are having just different discussions, different conversations. And I thought, well, they're working and talking, it's fine. Don't, you know, just carry on. And I hear some of them, and they talk about dads. And they're talking about whether they see their dads. And someone said, no, I don't see my dad that often, or no, my dad lives in this place, my dad lives in that place. And they're talking. And then this girl, she's a character. She's one of those girls where she's got a good heart, but you won't see it. Okay, she's quite rough around the edges, will say what she wants, will storm off, but she's got a good heart. And she turned to me and she said, oh, sir, do you see your dad? Okay. Now, my dad had passed away in 2004. So I said, no, my dad passed away a long time ago. So no, I don't see him. And she said, oh, sir, I'm so sorry. He was a good man. And I thought, what? You know, in a split second, you can have like all those thoughts. In that split second, she said that. I thought, wait, what? Why would she say that? How did she, what? My dad died before you were born. And then in the next breath, in the next sentence, she said, I know he was a good man because you're a good man. So I'm getting a bit, sorry. Sorry. That didn't happen when I practiced this. Okay. and it hit me. I'm standing in the room. And it's almost like everything went really slow, and it paused. And it's almost like, and it's almost as if God was saying to me, take this moment, thank you, take this moment and understand what she's saying. This is a 10-year-old. And she's got this insight. And it just really opened my eyes to saying, look, this is what God wants us to be. And as men, as role models, he wants me to be that person that someone can look at what I do and know that it came from something good. I don't have to preach or say, good, do this, sit nicely. Just the way that I am must have spoken to her on a level for her to say, I know he was a good man because you're a good man. Sorry, I made it all emotional and stuff now. and I just thought to myself as I was writing this, imagine the impact if we're all in tune with God. I'm speaking to men, and we all have the same kind of high standards that God has. And our children see that in me, they see that in Chima, they see that in Pastor Glenn, they see it in Louis, they see it in all the men that they interact with, that consistency, and that's going to set the standard for them. And in Japan, we went to Japan a few years ago, and we were at this busy train station, and it's hustle and bustle, people going in and out. And we saw these two little girls. There must have been 5 or 6 at the oldest, holding hands in their school uniform, walking towards the train. So we're looking around. We were with a tour guide, looking around. The parents going to be somewhere, you know, behind them or not nearby. No parents. So we asked the tour guide, "Where are the parents?" I said, "Oh, the girls are just going to school." I said, "But don't the parents take them?" She said, "No, because there's a culture, an expectation that once your kids leave the house and they're going to school or to pick up groceries, every adult who sees them looks after them. Every adult who sees them is responsible for them. So these kids were just going on their way, going through the ticket barriers. The train guy says, good morning, or whatever it is. They go through. Someone's there by the stairs. Someone's there by the train to make sure they can actually get on and, you know, don't get crushed in the squeeze. But at every step, there's that consistency. They know that someone is looking out for them. They can just get on with their thing. And I pray that for dads especially, that we would be so in tune with God that we set that high standard, that when our children are with us or with another dad or at their friend's house, that consistency is there. They can see, okay, this is what dads are supposed to be. So that's legacy. And the last one is unconditional love. This one is tough. Because sometimes, right? They do something, it's like, that's the fourth time I've told you. Nobody's counting. But, and this feature, I think, in our iDad is the core of everything. This should be at the core of everything we do. I spoke a couple of weeks ago at the men's breakfast, and we were talking about motivation, what motivates us as men. And I talked about this point. And if we look at the story of the prodigal son, I'm sure most of us know it. The youngest one wanted his inheritance, so he took it, went away, spent it, blew it all, and at the end was eating the stuff that pigs were eating. And he decided to come back to his dad. Dad was super happy. He said, "Look, let's have a party. Kill the fattened calf." The oldest son was a bit jealous because, I've been here, I've been doing this, I've been doing that. I've done everything you've asked me to. And he was kind of upset. And I was thinking, the youngest son, his motivation, or what he thought was important, was the material thing. So he wanted the money, he wanted to go off and do that. The oldest son, the thing that he thought was important was just duty. Just do, get tick, 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 my inheritance, please. And the father said to him, "Son, everything I have is yours. You don't earn it. You don't work for it. I have is yours." And that father's motivation, I believe, was unconditional love. Because no matter what either son did, that love was there. That inheritance was there for them anyway. And so I aspire to be like that father, a father who can kind of look at the situation and react appropriately in love. Now, I can imagine if this was an African tale or folk tale, and that son had come back, yeah, it's got a slightly different twist or a plot, because there's going to be some kind of punishment in there, some kind of retribution. "Oh, you're going to take my things and go?" It's going to be the eyes, the eyes. And that is not necessarily wrong, okay? I'm not saying don't discipline, because I think discipline's good, otherwise, it's a bit of a mess. But it has to be, the core of it has to be unconditional love. It has to be like, I'm disciplining you in love, not because I'm angry, okay? And I saw this thing where someone said, "Look, if your child does something and it angers you and you're super angry, then you need to walk away, change your energy, and then come back and deal with it. You don't deal with it in that moment where you're up here, okay?" And I guess that's what my dad did. Like, I'm sure we did things that annoyed him and upset him, but he didn't do it when he was here. He brought himself here and then addressed it. And it was all in love. And I'm going to say unconditional love is the thing that made Jesus do what he did. Before he went to the cross and he prayed to the Father and said, if it doesn't have to be this way, take this cup from me, but if it is, then your will be done. Out of love for us and love for the Father drove him to do something that he knew was going to be painful. He knew he was going to be separated from God. Okay, but he did God's will out of unconditional love. And I think it's important as fathers that, as strong and as macho and masculine or whatever we want to be, that is wrapped up in unconditional love. That the core of it is unconditional love. Because Jesus described it as one of the most important commandments. The first and great commandment, the second is this, that you should love your neighbor as yourself. The first one was love. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and with all your strength. So it's loving God, loving others. And that should be in everything that we do. In our interactions, it needs to be love. When people annoy us and we engage them in conversation, it needs to be done in love. There are people at my workplace that I used to avoid because I know they're going to start speaking about this or talk for ages when I've got stuff to do. And God challenged me. He said, no. Talk to them, because you don't know what effect that conversation is going to have on them, in love. And as soon as we start doing that, it's going to get difficult. As soon as you try and, wrap everything you do in love, it gets difficult. People will become more challenging. More things come your way. You start to question whether you're doing it the right way or you're not doing it. But John says in 1 John 2 verse 3-7, it says, "We know that we have come to know him if we keep his commandments. Whoever says, 'I know him,' but does not do what he commands is a liar, and the truth is not in that person. But if anyone obeys his word, the love of God is truly made complete in him. And this is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did." We know Jesus was all about love, and that was it. So fathers, I want to encourage you that whatever you do in love. However annoying the situation is, it's done in love. If you've got young kids and they wake you up in the middle of the night, you might feel bad, but it doesn't stop you loving them any less. When you do chores, so like the build it mode in the iDad. When we're doing chores, or we have to take the rubbish out, or it's hot and it smells, and you know, all these tedious things that we want to do, as Father, we do for our family. We do out of love. And so I think framing the things that we do, framing our interactions, framing how we talk to people about God, framing the way we think about people, if it comes from a place of love, then that is what God is expecting of us. That is what God wants for us. So just to recap this morning, I've talked about hero mode, okay, about being the protector, about having those abilities that God has given us and making sure we use them. We talked about legacy, what we pass down, and it's not just what we say that is important. It's also what we do, the life we live. I think that's probably going to have more impact, because there will be a point where your children won't understand what you're saying. Yeah, I remember when Jesse was little, and I'd say, he's crying, like, shh, shh, stop, stop. I'm like, why is he not stopping? Shh, stop, shh. Yeah, he has no idea. But what I do, the things that I do, are going to impact him more than just what I say. And the final thing, all of that has to be done, has to be done in love. I don't know if I had that scripture. I thought I put it in here. But there's a scripture that talks about, I think it's in 1 Corinthians, where it talks about love, and it says, if I can speak in tongues, and if I can do all of these things, but I don't have love, it's but a clanging cymbal. Yeah? I don't know if anyone has taught a music class and it's clanging cymbals, but nobody wants to hear it. If I'm telling off some, if I'm, you know, speaking to my child or disciplining them and it's not from a place of love, he's not hearing. If it's just from anger, he's not hearing it. It's important that in everything that we do, love is at the core. And the Bible talks about the three: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. So we've got hero mode, we've got legacy mode, but the greatest of these is unconditional love. Okay. So that's what I wanted to share with you this morning. Happy Father's Day. Thank you.